One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back for a brand new episode of Collider Ladies Night. I am so excited to welcome Kelly Marie Tran to the show to celebrate Raya and also all of your wonderful accomplishments, because preparing for this interview, it's just like one incredible thing after the next. It was just such a joy to rewatch so much of your work.
Oh my gosh, thanks for saying that.
I truly mean it. So before we jump into any titles here, though, I must introduce you to our lovely Ladies Night Dice Tower. Even though we have some time right now, this keeps me in check. I come up with 8 questions, roll the die 3 times, and whatever I roll, that's what we ask to start.
Great.
Going with number 1 here. We've got a number 7. 7 is... ooh, this is a fun one. Movie musicals. Because your miscast performance was incredible. I can't get enough of it.
Oh my gosh.
If you ever got the chance to do another one, what song would you pick and why?
Okay. First of all, thank you so much for watching that. I'm such a huge musical theater nerd. So to be asked to be part of miscast was such a big deal for me. And I love Book of Mormon, so I was just so happy to be able to do that. If I could choose anything else, I'm dying to be Gavroche in Les Mis.
Ooh.
Do you know Gavroche?
I do. I feel like I could hear it right now.
He's like the little kid, and he's like, when little people fight. Yeah, that guy. I want
to
be that guy.
Do they bring people back for more? I feel like we need to make this happen now.
I have no idea.
We're manifesting it in the process.
Yeah, manifest it.
All right. Roll number 2 for you is number 3. Ah, never again. What is something you did for a role that makes you say, I'm so glad I did that, but never, ever again?
Ooh, man, I really don't have that many regrets. When I tend to overcommit, as you can tell by my miscast video, but I don't really have any regrets yet, knock on wood. That's very cool to be able to say, but yeah.
That is, I like that answer. All right, we got one more here. Number 6 is last step. What is the very last thing that you absolutely have to do before you hit the set to shoot a big scene?
Oh my gosh. I like to take a quiet moment myself and remind myself that I'm doing something that I once thought was impossible, and that I need to celebrate the fact that I am living a miraculous, magical existence. That is what I always do right before I step on a set.
That is a lovely pep talk that I should probably give myself before every single thing I do, and then it would be even better.
Yeah.
All right, we're rolling into the beginning here. I'm going to start with your sketch comedy. Is there anything about kind of getting your start in the sketch comedy and improv scene that now, looking back, makes you say, I'm so glad that was the beginning. That's what my foundation was.
Yes. My sketch comedy improv background has been everything to me. I think the biggest thing is just the sort of community around, I was doing indie improv shows in like tiny theaters in LA with other improvisers, and they all became my best friends. And there's this, this very the first rule you learn about in improv is just yes anding, and making sure that you're not turning down someone else's ideas and that you are always adding to something and creating something together. That to me is something I want to take with me always and forever, because it's such a good way to look at the creative process.
Yet another thing that I kind of want to back pocket and morph into what I do on my side of the industry. All right, taking a step into Star Wars land right now. I want to know about the audition process, because I was recently talking to a couple people who are involved in the MCU. And I know with big franchises like that, there's tons of secrecy. So when you do your very, very first audition for Rose, do you have any idea what you're auditioning for, who she is, or are they essentially giving you these random sides where you can't connect the dots between that material and the project you're actually going for?
Yeah, so I remember getting an email, just like you normally would for an audition, but the email said the project was the Untitled Rian Johnson Project, which after a little bit of light Googling, it was pretty clear that he was doing episode 8. That being said, we didn't get sides for pair. It was all like they wouldn't even let you have them. So we would get to the audition and then you would be given these sides that were printed on red paper so that you wouldn't take them with you. And it was essentially a cold read. It was the first audition. And I remember like the character description said like 20s, female, character-y, and that was it. Like you didn't really know anything about it. It was wild. I will say the best thing that I did was probably just try as much as possible to be present in the moment and pay attention to what the scene was about, as opposed to trying to act a genre or play to a specific universe, if that makes sense.
Do you remember what the cold read was? Is there anything about that we can now see in the final Rose in Last Jedi?
There were two scenes, and one of them was a scene between myself and John Boyega, Finn. And it's like the casino scene when we're sort of looking for the master codebreaker, and then the sort of monologue scene where Rose is talking about wanting to put her fist through this like lousy, beautiful town. Those were the two scenes.
I love that line. I did have one other question, but now that you brought up Canto Bight, I do want to ask about that, because I have become a very big believer that that sequence does not get the credit it deserves. And what it does for, I don't know, showing a dreamlike place and then showing the corruption and greed that really exists within it is just, it's so touching and meaningful. So let's go with a two-parter here. I'm not going to overwhelm you. I'll give you one at a time. First, do you think that scene was, I don't know, maybe misunderstood and deserves more credit than it actually got?
I love that scene. I mean, I'm biased, so I guess I can say that. But yeah, and it's weird when you're in a movie and then you sort of, you know, once the movie goes out into the world, your experience with, you know, when I watch that movie, it's like, I remember how I felt that day. I remember John and I walking on set and being like, this is the biggest set we'll ever be on, and seeing all of the creatures moving and being part of this universe. Like, these are the things I remember about being on set that day. I think, like you said, that scene does a lot for, really recognizing how certain communities who are able to enjoy their privilege live in a world where they don't even have to address some of the horrible things other people are dealing with. I love that scene. So
now I want to focus specifically on, I guess it's kind of like a monologue that you deliver to Finn in the movie, where, you know, it's essentially a whole lot of exposition where you're explaining Rose's past to him, and it is so incredibly heartfelt. So what would you say is the key to delivering information like that? You know, clearly delivering your lines as you need to, but making sure that the audience is engaging with it and feeling what Rose experienced, which I think you very much accomplish.
Oh, thanks for saying that. I think for me, I really try not to think about the audience at all. I try to think about where that character is and what they're actually feeling. And so much of Rose in that moment so much of the things that she said. I remember getting those sides and reading that, you know, reading those sides and working on it. And I was like, I feel like this character is inside of me because so much of my upbringing was that, you know, my parents are also from a war-torn country. They had to leave their home in order to escape it. We lived in a world where we lived in a pretty well-off community, but it was because my parents saved every penny and we never went on vacation and they never bought clothes so that we could go move to an area that had good public schools. So to be able to exist in a community where I think people weren't really aware of the struggles that it took other people to even exist. Yeah, I relate to that. And I think that for that moment, and for me just as an actor in general, I never want to think about how I'm affecting the audience. I always want to think about what is this person really feeling in this moment and be really specific and really understand, I guess, that part of human existence. And I think that if you can do that, if you can, as much as possible, just be honest and be okay with being seen, even if it's scary, then I think people understand that and are able to relate to that. Yeah.
Very successful in that department. We've got one more Last Jedi question for you, because I think the world of Rian Johnson and Ron Bergman. So I want to know what it was like working on set with them kind of as a duo. What do they do together on set that you just wish you saw on more sets out there?
Yes, they are the best people in the entire world. And I just think that they work so well together. They've worked together for so long. And the best thing is going on set and feeling like you're just in a playground. Like you never, and for me, like being a person who was not part of this world, who was working a day job to the day I got that part, I actually, after I found out I got that part, I went straight back to work and like just answered emails because I was like so confused. And being a person that was that fish out of water to go on a set and feel comfortable and feel able to play was absolutely, I credit all of that to Rian and Ram and their ability to foster an environment where, you know, people feel safe.
None of that surprises me. I guess on the Rian and Ram topic, I mean, everyone's in Knives Out 2 at this point, are you?
Everyone is in Knives Out. I cannot wait to see Knives Out 2. I'm so excited for them. I'm so excited for them.
So linking now Last Jedi to Rise, I do have to ask, after making Last Jedi and finishing shooting that film, what were your expectations for Rose in the series going forward? And how did they compare to what we actually got? Because I'm sure you've heard this time and time again, but I am very much of the belief that the amount of Rose we got in Rise of Skywalker was just, I mean, it was flat out absurd.
It's hard. You know, I think as an actor, you don't really have control over what is happening in a narrative, if that makes sense. And I think, you know, as an actor and as an individual, I always try to take my expectations out of a situation because I also want to, as much as possible, try and be present in experience. I am really, really proud of the way that I've been able to sort of show up for myself during this whole journey. Because again, like if we're going through my journey and my career, like I went from sketch comedy and doing improv in indie theaters to then doing Star Wars. And then from there doing, like it's nonsensical. It's miraculous, nonsensical, magical stuff that for me, I just want people to know and believe that you might go through certain times in your life that are hard and difficult, but coming out on the other side of that and having your support group and being with people who believe in you, there's nothing like it in the entire world. And I think for me, moving from, you know, the Star Wars experiences to then going to Raya has been absolutely miraculous. And Raya for me is about celebrating the parts of myself that as a child, I was taught that I should hide. And what a poetic healing experience that has been. Yeah.
I'm not at the Raya portion yet, but I just have to emphasize how special that movie is. I happen to have been rewatching it like right before we started filming and had to reapply all of my makeup because that ending, like I've seen it, I think 4 or 5 times at this point, and every single time at the end, it's just, it's not just like tearing up. It's like uncontrollably sobbing, but at the sight of seeing all, I'm going to stop there so I don't spoil the movie for anyone, but I almost just blabbed about the ending. All right. One more like franchise type question for you before we leave Star Wars. In general, what is one thing that you experience while working on those movies that makes you say, I loved that. I hope to have that experience on more sets out there. And then what's something that makes you say, well, you know, maybe that wasn't exactly the way I wanted it to be, but now I can learn from that experience and I can do this with it in order to make my future projects even stronger.
Yeah. One thing that I loved was just the magic of it. Being able to walk into different apartments and see how the fathiers were being made and how every single strand of hair was being sewn into this creature, or seeing the different sets that were being built, how everything was designed so meticulously, the costumes department, Michael Kaplan, who's a genius, like everything. I think the artistry of that is something that I want to take with me forever. Like, even if I'm not on something that is as big and large as that, just the idea of making very meticulous, very specific, very conscious choices in every aspect of a film is something I want to take with me. On the other side, something I don't want to take with me, I think the hardest thing about working on something that big is that you just don't really get to know every single person. Like, in a perfect world, I would have loved to have a relationship with every gaffer and grip and every PA and every, you know, art department assistant and every, I would have loved that. And I think it's sort of the nature of something that large is there are going to be pieces moving in the machine that you never cross paths with. So yeah, I think that's something in the future. I would love to be in a world where everybody working on the same project gets to feel like they're all seen and loved and valued and known, I guess. I don't even know if that's possible, but I would love
it. It should be. And maybe if it's not 100% possible right now, just having that idea in mind and working towards it is good enough for me at this point. Now, stepping into animation in general, I've just heard so many stories about folks who are live action actors trying to break into voice acting. What was the key for you? What kind of started to get the ball rolling in that sector of the industry?
I honestly think my improv background was the best thing, because Croods 2 was the first animated project that I got brought onto and I auditioned for it. And I just remember improvising during the entire audition, and it was just such a fun experience. And then I auditioned for Raya, and yeah, I think the freedom to play and to be honest in the moment, but also feel free to like being free to change the words. And I don't know. Yeah. I think that I've been really, really lucky to work with so many incredible people, and also really, this is going to sound crazy, because when you're a struggling actor in LA, the last thing you want to hear from someone who's in my position, a very privileged position, who's, you know, had this miraculous trajectory, the last thing you want to hear is that, you know, your struggling years really teach you what you need to know. But I think that's absolutely true for me. It took me, I don't know, I think I started trying to get an agent in high school and no one wanted me. That was probably 2006 is when I started. And I was on set for Jedi in 2016. So it took me about 10 years. And all of those years of struggling, of like going through acting classes and going to casting director workshops and doing the improv, like all of those skills are things that I use now. So I think for me, getting into animation is sort of a culmination of a decade of work. Yeah.
I think I can see that reflected in your work in The Croods 2 and Raya also. Just to compare the description you gave of your Star Wars audition to your Raya audition, can you kind of paint that scene for us? What kind of sides are you given? What is it like interacting with the filmmakers or the casting director? How'd that go?
Yeah, well, the casting director, Jamie Roberts, who I'm such a huge fan of because she's cast every incredible Disney property. I just think she's so wonderful. She really believed in me from the beginning. I think she is really, truly the only reason why I got to be Raya. She really believed in me. But yeah, there was an initial meeting where I just sort of was told about the project and about the character. And then there was a couple auditions after that. And it was a definitely different experience because, yeah, you're not, you know, when you're auditioning for something like Star Wars and it's like a live action thing, you're fully on camera. And at the last, during the last audition, it was like a camera test that had costumes and a set and everything in its entirety. Whereas for an animated project, you're sort of, you know, you got your headphones on and you're in a booth. So it's a very different experience. It was still pretty secretive. The sides did not have the character's actual name. And I think a lot of it too was in process. The story changes so much from the first time you're brought onto the project until it sort of gets out into the world. Which I think was different than episode 8, because episode 8, Ryan is such a genius. Like the script that I read in 2015, 2016 is 97% of what you saw in the theater when it came out. And animation, I think, in my experience, is sort of constantly changing. And they have the luxury of being able to work out a scene with the actors and then go back and animate. And if it didn't work, try it again. You don't have that luxury in live action. You can't really have, I guess, I don't know. I don't have enough money to be like, oh yeah, let me just shoot this scene and then go back and then shoot it again and then go back and shoot it. Like, yeah, it's just a different experience, but both equally, equally incredible and equally forced me to grow in ways that I didn't anticipate.
With the changes that happen in mind, what would you say is the biggest difference between the first script you read for Raya and what we see in the final product? But something that's specific to you, something that you know is 100% you, that would have been entirely different if anyone else had voiced that character.
Yeah, I mean, I would say there is a specific scene with Raya that we basically improvised in the booth. And that is the prayer scene when she's in the cave and she sort of says a little incantation. And I remember reading that scene and I remember really, I know the crazy thing is, you know, I'm telling you about this experience, like it was easy for me, but I remember in that moment being very afraid to ask if I could try something different. And I remember feeling like I knew what it was like to be a character or to be a person in life. You know, at this point, Raya has traveled for 6 years and she is at the end of her rope and she doesn't know if any of this is going to lead to anything or if she's just wasted those years searching for this thing. And I remember asking if I could try something different because I remember what it felt like to be desperate. And I remember how I acted in those moments and what it felt like to pray to a being, in this case, Raya's praying to Sisu, that you're not even sure exists, like you're just that desperate. So yeah, that prayer scene was absolutely improvised and it made it into the movie, which I just love.
So one of our last sections here is a game we're calling Movie Dream Team. I've got 3 questions for you and we're gonna build a movie out of them. So first, can you pick a movie musical you would love to star in? What is that musical adaptation? And then we'll take it from there.
Honestly, I love so many musicals. Oh my gosh, I'm like getting nervous.
I won't hold you to it. This could be one of many.
One of many, okay. One of many musicals that I would love to star in. Oh my gosh, I'm nervous.
I love it so much, I like it.
I know, I care so much. I'm like, I really, really care a lot about this. Okay, I'm just gonna say, what should we say? I don't know. I care too much. What would you like to star in? Let's start there.
Like, honestly, I'm a shit singer, so I wouldn't want to ruin any of my favorite musicals. But the first thing that came to mind when I was listening to your Myst cast, and also because I think you need to work with John Chu, is Wicked.
I would love nothing more.
Okay, so we're gonna put you in the Wicked movie right now. Which role do you want to play in Wicked?
Oh my gosh, you were like making me so nervous. Oh my gosh, why am I like crying right now? I love musical theater so much. I'm so if I could play anyone, honestly, I would love to be both. How about we do a book of like how I did Book of Mormon, but I would do both characters.
Honestly, sign me up for this movie. Here, this next one might take some of the pressure off. Okay, you can bring 3 co-cast that you've worked with before to this Wicked adaptation, who do you bring?
Who do I bring? Okay.
And who do you cast them as?
Okay. This is so good. Oscar Isaac as Fiero.
You're never going to be able to unsee this.
Oscar Isaac as Fiero. Okay, so I'm, okay, who are the other characters? Okay, I should pick one of the, I should pick one of the female leads so I could put someone else in it female lead.
Okay.
I mean, I think Naomi Aki, I think the world of her. Oh, Naomi Aki. Okay, Naomi Aki and I would play opposite each other. Not sure which character, maybe we'd switch off doing both. Glinda and Elphaba, maybe. And then someone else, dare I say it? Who would be the wizard? Who would be the wizard? I think Nicolas Cage might have to be the wizard.
I don't think this could have come out any better. This is officially seared in my brain for life, and I need it.
Sear it in your brain.
Oh yeah. My God, that was brilliant. All right. We have come to the end of Ladies Night. We always end with the same two questions. The first one is, name someone who you think is changing this industry for the better.
Carlos Lopez Estrada, who I just love so much. He directed me in Raya. He is directing this, or directed this movie Summertime that I'm executive producing that comes out this summer. And I think he's absolutely changing the world. This movie is about 25 different spoken word artists in Los Angeles, and they're all making their feature film debut. And we've talked so much about wanting to sort of pass the megaphone to historically marginalized communities, and he's doing that. And I just love and adore him so much, and he's absolutely changing the world.
Did you see me like want to explode when you brought up Summertime? Because I adore that movie.
I saw it
at Sundance, and you know when you go into a movie and you make some I just thought it wasn't going to be for me because in general I'm not exposed to a lot of spoken words. So I'm like, this is kind of different. I don't know. I fell so hard for this cast. They are incredible.
Okay, let's talk about that for a sec, because I've spent the past 2 months going through poetry workshops with this cast, with so many members of, and I am absolutely, fully, completely changed. I'm a new human. I don't know how to explain it. They've inspired me to just be a braver and more honest artist, and the fact that you loved that movie and that you saw it, and that means so much to me.
It made such a huge impression. And for everyone out there, do keep an eye out for that movie. Last one for you. And this can be a heavy one, or you could take it in a lighter direction if you prefer. What is the biggest fear that you've ever had that you've actually managed to overcome?
The biggest fear I've ever had that I've managed to overcome is truly just still existing in this world, I think, and working in this space. I think there was a time where I was afraid to be seen. And I'm really proud of all the work that I've done to still be here.
You should be. You're awesome. I didn't even bring this up earlier, but we had met the first time during the Last Jedi premiere party, and you were just so incredibly, like, infectiously happy and warm, and it was seriously like one of the best premiere encounters I've ever had, and it's so memorable, and I just love the vibes you put out in this industry. Please keep doing it. You are awesome. For everyone out there, keep an eye out for Raya and the Last Dragon. You can own it on Blu-ray right now. It's available. Go buy it and share it with your family, friends, everybody, because it's wonderful. Kelly, again, thank you for hanging out with us on Ladies Night, and huge congratulations.
Thank you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.